You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo.
All right, welcome to episode 61 of the Reinvest Podcast, the only show, as a matter of fact, that you can find out about real estate investing. So you're going to want to be telling your friends about this and listening. And we are also on YouTube, so make sure to check out our YouTube channel, Reinvest Podcast, where you can get the extra video content from our podcast. As you notice, today's a little bit of a different episode. Garrett, if you're watching the video, Garrett is not next to me. So I'm kind of missing my co-host, but I'm going to introduce our special guest today. And it is, in fact, Garrett Gatton.
We got him.
We got him. They didn't think you were here for a minute.
It's a real nail biter.
But Garrett is going to be our guest today. So we're actually going to talk about one of our deals. We did an episode, just the two of us, I don't know, a long time ago, last year sometime. And we talked about house hacking. So we kind of gave our story about how we both house hacked into one of our first homes.
Yeah.
And that was a good way for us to get into a property and cut expenses and really underwrite our own mortgage and live there for free. And so go back, listen to that episode if you're interested in that. But this is going to be kind of a continuation of that in sorts of us furthering our investments and us kind of giving you guys more of a deep dive into what that looks like for where we're at right now. So Garrett, what are we going to be talking about today?
Yeah, so today is pretty exciting. In the past, we've had guests on to talk about mobile home parks, kind of what their operations look like that way. Today, we're going to talk about our own mobile home park deal. So maybe you've heard us mention that in recent episodes in the last year about us just acquiring that. So that was back in May, at the end of May of 2023 when we did that. And now we're about 8 months in here and we've got enough data to do a deep dive today with you. And the reason that's important is it's helpful to dissect real estate investments, understand what's going on below the surface, how's it going, and then what are the lessons that that we're learning. Sometimes we can talk at a high level or very conceptual with our guests. So today's going to be more slow, in the weeds, very tactical, and hopefully you're able to kind of learn some stuff that way. But Seth, give us some context. How did we even get to the point where we were interested in mobile home parks?
We weren't interested in mobile home parks. That's the short of it. So this deal came about. One of our other partners in our company had a relationship with the owner, and the owner had expressed, "Hey, I'm looking to sell. Maybe you guys would be interested. Maybe you guys could help me." And so, long story short, that was really how the deal got in front of us. It was just a personal connection. Deals don't always come at you like that, but I mean, this one did, and it's part of just why it's always important to be out networking, building those relationships with other investors and people in your community. But so this person came forward, and really what got us interested is that this person wanted to seller finance the mobile home park.
Did you say seller finance?
I said seller finance. That's when like you zoom in and you're like, what? No, so he wanted to seller finance the mobile home park, and it wasn't just a seller carry back and it wasn't just a partial finance. He wanted to finance the whole thing. So we only put down 20% on this mobile home park.
No bank involved.
And no bank involved. He financed the 80%. And we ended up negotiating some really, really good terms.
Which we're going to add a second
on that.
But I want to jump back just for a minute. I know we were not specifically looking for like mobile home park to buy.
But we were looking for opportunity.
We were looking for opportunity. And we had been hearing for a couple years about why mobile home parks were even a good strategy. Maybe, I don't know if you're listening, what your perceptions have been to mobile home parks. But prior to like 3 to 4 years ago, I had always heard probably more negative things about mobile home parks, how they're a management nightmare. There maybe some skepticism about the tenant demographic and all that. You know, there was some things there.
Well, and they're always portrayed like quirky in the movies, and they're always portrayed.
Right.
You know, you kind of.
Right.
In the way people talk about them. So, yeah, I think it's prior to 3 to 4 years ago, it was kind of didn't have a great outlook, but really, over this last few years, the market's gotten hot, and mobile home parks have blown up, and these companies have started to buy these mom and pop mobile home parks and you know, packaging them together in huge portfolios and selling them to institutional investors. And it's really driven a lot of people in the market to go after mobile home parks. And one of the big reasons is because they're more of a recession-proof asset.
Right, right. Which, you know, if you've been watching, we're in the longest bull run that we've ever had, you know. And so we're due for some kind of a correction. I think people saw that. Some of the bigger players saw that and wanted to position their holdings into this kind of investment. And then the other thing, too, which I figured out along the way is they're not making more mobile home parks.
Right.
You're not, you know, a lot of municipalities and local government will not allow for that type of zoning on land. And so it's kind of a diminishing supply that way. But it's a very entry level housing in a time in our country where there's a housing shortage.
Yeah.
And even since we've owned it, I think we've been surprised about
the demand
for people to live in a mobile home park.
Yeah.
So tell us about the seller finance terms and why that was allowed us to pay what we did and buy it.
So correct me if I'm wrong. I think our purchase price was 1.75 million.
Yes. Yep.
So we bought this mobile home park for 1.75 million. A lot of dollars. That's a lot of dollars and a lot of cents.
Dollars.
So we only had the seller was only requiring us to bring 20% and he was going to carry the paper on the rest of the 80. But really a seller finance deal is only as good as the terms. And when I say terms, the interest rate and the length and some of the stipulations within that agreement. And we ended up getting really great terms. The seller wanted it to be a win-win for us and a win-win for him. And so this is going to blow some people away, but we ended up getting an 8-year term. So he's going to hold the paper for 8 years, so which is awesome.
So there's term and then there's amortization.
Yeah. Yeah. And the amortization of this note, this private note, is 30 years, which lowers our payment. So a traditional, you know, commercial mortgage is 20, 25 years. You know, for a deal this size, we probably could have got 25-year amortization, but we got 30, which lowered our monthly payment, increases the amount of cash flow, you know, we can get on the property. 8-year term. So we have 8 years to exit this property or refinance it or sell it. And then he gave us a 4.5% interest rate in an environment where interest rates are rising. And so that was and like I said, he's a sophisticated investor. So he understands the market. He understood where things were at. He knows what's kind of the going rate. And but like I said, he really wanted it to be a win-win scenario for us and for him.
And I think part of the reason, so, you know, like when you're talking about structuring a deal, there's different variables that you can play with, right, to still get the same outcome. So he wanted a certain number on the purchase price, which is probably market. It was at, you know, what was market. And it may be a little bit above, but because the interest rate was so low, it allowed us to justify paying the price that he wanted. And he was looking for mailbox money. He was tired. And so I want to explain a little bit about the win-win scenario that you were describing for our guests. So like what would cause somebody to want to give these kind of terms? Mm-hmm. He had been a longtime owner, and he was done with the management intensive portion of this. And he wanted to kind of move into a different stage in his investment career to where he wanted to be more passive in nature. And so he partnered with the right guys, people who he trusted were capable and competent, because we had to sell him on us and our ability to operate this park because he was going to be the one, you know, on the hook for it because he was the bank. And so it allowed him to move into more of a passive nature. And then also it gave us enough room to then go in and create some equity and some value, which we'll talk about here in a minute. So talk about maybe like where the rents were and then, you know, what does that look? How does that translate for a mobile home park?
So there's, I guess, a couple different ways people could own a mobile home park. So you can own the park and the homes, and you can rent out the homes, you know, similar to like a single family house. And so you really just have a bunch of rentals. So, or you can own the park and you just own the lots, and then the residents of the park, they own their own homes. So essentially at that point, you only own the land, and you are just collecting lot rent. And so this park was very heavy on resident-owned mobiles. I think we only had 13 mobile homes that were owned by the park when we bought it. So we bought the whole park, 53 pads, with 13 mobile homes. But all the other residents own their own homes, which is great, which is more of what we wanted because there's a lot of maintenance involved when you start owning a lot of homes. And so when we bought the property, lot rent was at 220.
Yeah, somewhere at 210, and then he was starting to move into 220.
And this is why the deal made sense, is because from day one, everything was under rented.
Right.
The lot rent was under. And then you might be asking, well, how do you find that out? How do you know that if you're looking at something? Well, like anything else, even like a single family house, you just have to go and find the comps. So if you're wanting to rent out your single family house, how much should I rent this out for? Well, talk to a real estate agent, talk to a property manager.
Hop on apartments.com.
Hop on apartments.com. What are single family houses renting for? And so that's all we did. It might sound really complicated, but it's not. You just look at other mobile home parks, and there's another mobile home park in the same town. And we were able to find some really great comps, and lot rent in that park was $300, $325 on every lot.
Yeah.
And so we knew that we had $80 to $100 of movement on the lot rent from day one. And it wasn't even like the parks was super run down. It wasn't a trashy park at all.
He had just put new asphalt in on all the roadways, which we'll get it. Actually, maybe that would be a good time to kind of get into this. When we were doing the due diligence process on that, he had had a company within the last 6 months put new asphalt down. But they came and they put the asphalt down in late November. And there were a couple of factors. They were bringing the new asphalt from a long distance away. And then the owner was trying to keep the cost as low as possible. So the company that was installing it shortcut their process a little bit. Long story short, because of the temperature and those variables, some of the asphalt did not adhere properly to the existing road surface. And so we negotiated that company come back out and fix and repatch those areas before we closed. And the seller was, you know, obviously, if he was going to keep the park and we didn't buy it, he needed it to happen anyway.
Exactly. And he was a rock star, stayed on the company, made sure it happened.
But if we'd have closed on it,
it wasn't easy.
If we would have closed on it, what do you think the chances would have been that company would have come back out?
Zero.
Yeah.
They would have been like, yeah, we'll come out.
Who are you?
Cost you some money.
Right.
So why don't you talk about what does that do when you buy a property that's under market rent? And what is that? Why does that make sense to pay market rate for something when rents are under market rate?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so one of the things that we get excited about when it comes to multifamily or properties like a mobile home park that function very similarly, self-storage would be similar to this as well. Essentially, you have a lot of tenants, a lot of different people paying, and you know, maybe the price that you're paying is in one spot, but there's different ways to create value in a property. And so at a very base level, it's very duh, right? You drive income or you lower expenses. And so right off the bat, we knew that we could buy this and it wasn't going to make sense for us just to keep the lot rent at 220. We wouldn't have made money that way.
Right.
But we did our underwriting and did a pro forma, and our pro forma is going to map out kind of a business plan and where we think we can go with the property over a timeline with the rents and what we can do with the expenses. And when we looked at that, you know, right out of the gate, we went to 300. So we bought it at the end of May and I want to say August 1st or September 1st, we had moved everything to $300 a month on lot rent across the board. And that's like a 25 to 30% increase of income just overnight. And it wasn't that we were gouging anybody. It was that the seller was that far below. And he knew it too. He already had
he had a plan.
He had a plan to bring it up. Yeah. But part of it is, you know, his relationship. He'd owned the park for a long time. And so his relationship with it from a financial perspective was different than what ours was going to be. You know, he was, this park had been in his family for a long time. We were coming in and paying a premium for it. So it didn't make sense for us to keep, you know, the lot rent where it was.
And we had plans to do improvements to it too. So why don't we talk about that? Why don't you talk about you buy it, raising the rent's only one piece of that.
Yep.
What are some of the other pieces that are going to drive value to the park? Because really, at the end of the day, we want to increase the income, and we want to increase the value overall of the asset.
And when we talk about value overall, I'm glad you brought that up. It's not just value financially to the property, but it's value to the residents there as well.
Right.
And so we had identified that through the process of buying the park and then just listening to the residents, we figured out that one of the things they wanted back were parking lines.
Yeah.
Striping everything, because it was making a lot of confusion as to where people were parking. And you just had a lot of drama.
People parking in front of other people's mobile homes and stuff to you as an owner might not be an inconvenience, but when these people are living there every day, that's a big deal to them.
Right. Installing speed bumps and signage so that it felt safe for the families in the parks. The tree removal was a big one, not necessarily because people were wanting that, but because they were messing with our sewer lines. And then they were just liabilities if there was a storm to come through and you have like a 35-ton tree fall on a mobile home.
just, not a good day.
Yeah, it's not going to like, it's not like having something fall in your garage. So it was a safety issue. So that's what we did. We came in, we had, even though the other company put new asphalt down, they didn't reseal it. So we ended up resealing it, putting new parking lines on there to fix the issue that was feedback from the tenants. We removed a lot of trees that were big trees, which created a more safe environment. And then it was also a maintenance play as well, so that we wouldn't have to keep dumping money into the sewer infrastructure.
And just to give you guys an idea, it was like $30,000 of like tree removal and stump removal. And by the time, you throw in the lot lines and all that stuff, I mean, this stuff, when you're talking about a big property and a big asset, these are all little things that add up really quick.
And we knew that going into it. And so we raised enough money on the front end. We brought enough capital into the deal to be able to address those issues. So that's a part of kind of having a plan, understanding that. We changed the signage on the property to just bring up perception. Hey, there's new ownership here. And it was an improvement in signage too. Mm-hmm. And that may seem like a small thing, but the residents who live there, they take pride in living there. And so it was a way to show them that we were committed to making the park a better place to live.
Because the reality is we could have bought that and done nothing to it and raised the rents to where they are now and done nothing additional.
Right.
But, I mean, we want it to be a win-win for us and the residents. So
when we say value, that's what we're talking about. We're about value for the residents, because at the end of the day, if we create value for them, and this isn't real estate investing across the board, who is helping you have a real estate business? Well, it's the tenant, the resident, the person that's paying the income for the service that you're providing. So we wanted to hold up our end of the bargain, and we're doing that. So those things were very visual to the park. It changed things. It kind of freshened things up. Stuff the owner probably would have done eventually, but we were just able to accelerate that because we had the energy and new ownership. And then the other thing that practically, we were looking at the park and saying, what are the dead assets in the park that we want to, that we need to address so that we can actually drive more income? Because you don't want to just spend money for the sake of spending money. So one of those things was there was a double wide towards the front of the park that needed remodeled and needed hooked up to the sewer. So that's one of our, now that we're coming into, the next part of 2024 or the first part of 2024, that's a part of our business plan, is to remodel that, get it hooked up to the sewer, and then that'll be more rental income for us that we didn't have before. There were two lots that were vacant and didn't have any mobile homes on them. So we got those cleared and ready. So those are ready to receive new mobiles. And our plan the next year is to put two new mobiles on there and either sell those outright or rent those as more income. So it's been very calculated in the way we've put money into the park.
So someone finds a deal like we did, right? You find an opportunity, you find a deal, and maybe you have the competency to run the deal. But what do you do if you don't have any money?
Yeah, it's a good question.
maybe not any money, but maybe you don't have $500,000 to put into an asset,
right?
In cash.
So, you could partner with somebody who has capital. You could find hard money, which is a short-term solution. and you'd want to have a plan to be able to obviously finance into something more long term. The seller finance perspective, I mean, I know he was carrying 20%. There are some seller finance scenarios where they'll carry even more than 80% of the balance. Maybe they'll carry 90 or 100%. Those do exist. This wasn't one of those scenarios. But we did have a couple of partners who had the financial availability at the time, but didn't want to operate it, didn't want to be as hands-on. They had some other roles that they were able to provide as well. And so we were able to form a partnership around that and still bring that money to the deal.
And I think it's just important to know, like, don't write something off or don't write an opportunity off or a deal off just because you feel like you're lacking.
Right.
I think those restrictions should just help you push you outside of your comfort zone to find a way to make it happen and find a way forward. And a lot of times it's through partnerships. You got to be careful about your partnerships. But I mean, a lot of times that can be a way to move forward and to start helping you build wealth or get over the hump of your first deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you don't have to miss out on an opportunity.
Yep. One of the other parts of our business plan that I wanted to talk about was the park-owned homes. And you kind of mentioned this earlier. So when we bought the park, there were 13 park-owned homes, which means that was a part of the sale. We purchased these mobile homes. So we owned all the land, all the lot, all the infrastructure. And then of the 53, we owned 13 of the actual mobiles. And when we were looking at the profit loss statements from the seller, we observed that there was a lot of money that he was spending in labor and material on these home rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought to ourselves, man, we could really eliminate a lot of overhead if we divested ourselves of these mobile homes and just had more residents paying lot rent.
A lot of overhead and a lot of headache.
Right, right. Because so we sold three of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Get into even the ones that we sold. Well, actually, I don't want to steal that. That's our later. That's our smaller pocket story for later. We'll talk about how difficult it is to remodel some of these mobile homes.
Yeah.
But that was our plan. We sold three of them, and we are incrementally trying to divest ourselves of these. And there's two ways to do that. One is just a cash sale, which was the scenario for the three we sold. And the other scenario is to do like a seller finance to them, the resident, to where maybe they put money down and then they make a payment to us, which honestly, when you look at what the rent payment was and the lot rent from them, it was kind of a wash. Like them paying a mortgage payment in lot rent was about the equivalent of them paying a rent payment in lot rent.
Yeah.
So.
And the reason we'd want to divest ourselves, we kind of touched on it, but it's to eliminate the headache of the maintenance and the cost of the maintenance and the labor of the maintenance of all these homes. And they just add up quickly. And, you know, mobile homes, they're literally made to move. And so they're not maybe quite as sturdy. It's not the same construction as a regular house, as you can imagine.
Right.
There's a lot more kind of little stuff that maybe wears out quicker or just isn't built as strong. And a lot more maintenance is needed over the years. So
let's talk about our pivot. So what were our exit strategies going into this? You know, it's really important whenever you buy an investment property that you don't just have one strategy that has to work. That's going to put you in a really tight spot if that strategy were to not work. So when we came into this, we were looking at it two ways, and our partnership as a whole was on board with this. We were on board with a long-term hold if that's what it came to. And we knew that if we needed to fall back to that position indefinitely, we can hold this.
What would be a reason we would need to hold it for the whole 8 years?
Yeah. So, and maybe it'd be better to talk about kind of what our strategy was, option A. And then if option A didn't work, why option B would be a good opportunity. So a lot of these investments, they kind of function on a 5-year timeline. And so we thought reasonably in 5 years, we could come in, improve the operations of the park, drive income, streamline some of the inefficiencies of rent collection, just tenant communication, park management, so that somebody else could buy this and not have a job. They could literally buy a turnkey investment. So that was kind of the end goal, was how do we create the processes to be that way for the end user and sell this with enough time left on the seller finance note to where they could have a low interest loan relative to what market, you know,
right,
interest would be. And that was one of, that was by design. One of the things that we negotiated into the seller finance proposal is that it would be assumable. And so that was option A. Hey, in 2 to 5 years, let's reposition the park, let's stabilize it, let's improve the operations, and then let's sell it. And in selling it, you know, by that time, we've driven the value of the property by bringing more income into it, because that's how all investment grade, you know, assets are valued. But if that didn't happen, let's say the market in 5 years wasn't where we wanted it to be. People weren't buying, money wasn't really accessible for buyers to finance, you know, the asset we're selling. We could always kind of pull back and punt, meaning that we could have held it for longer and continued to collect cash flow off the property.
Right. Well, we're going to jump into our smaller pockets. So this is the part of the show where we talk about something that didn't go as planned, a deal that went wrong. And so one of the smaller pockets experiences of this deal was the park-owned homes. So we've run into a lot of issues with the park-owned homes, not because the previous owner was trying to hide anything or anything like that. It's just because they're old homes. I mean, you're talking about mobile homes that have been around for 50, 60 years. And they've had a lot of wear and tear, and there's a lot of old infrastructure, a lot of old water lines, old sewer lines, and it just, it's a lot more than you think looking at it.
Yeah.
And so, so like Garrett had said, we had planned, we had 13 park-owned mobile homes. The plan was to divest ourselves of these mobile homes to lower expenses and all that stuff. And so when we bought the park, how the deal was structured is really an average of $16,000 was given for each mobile home, just on average. And some of them were realistically worth more. Some of them were in poor condition and worth less.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's been a learning process trying to reposition these three that we have sold.
Well, and can I just, the first part, and we didn't plan on talking about this part of the smaller pockets thing, but backing up, before we even were shocked by the condition of some of these, I think we overvalued the mobile homes that we did buy a part of the sale.
Yeah.
We just kind of like...
We should have gotten more granular with each individual home.
Yep.
Correct. And it was our first time buying a mobile home park and really our first time dealing with mobile homes in general.
Yeah.
And so we were a little bit...
Green
and naive about the value of some of these homes.
And it was like, I remember asking the question on the front end, like, I wonder if this is a fair price for these. And when I would try to figure out how to establish a value, it's actually not that easy to find data out there on the values of these. You can look at what new stuff goes for. You can kind of look at what's active and on the market. But there's a lot of factors. There's the type of home it is. When it was built is a big one.
Size
of the home. You know, is it a 12-foot wide, a 14-foot wide? Is it 65 feet long? Is it 85 feet long? And so it's not standard. And first of all, I think we overpaid for them probably a little bit.
Yeah.
And didn't know it. So anyway.
And so really you can wrap that up in the purchase price and say it is what it is. Really the goal would be to sell them and not lose money. Right?
You
think that would be a good goal. So we started working on these first few, and one had come vacant. Well, we bought it, and it was already vacant, and it was partially remodeled, and we're like, oh, we'll just come in there, and we'll do a punch list, and we had a buyer that was going to take this thing. It was a one-bedroom mobile home, real small. They were going to take this thing for $12,000, and we're...
Well, before we sold that one, lot 35, it was open, vacant when we bought the park. And we were like, oh, that'll be rent ready. And then we walked through it and we were like, holy crap, there's a lot of stuff that needs done here still. And somebody surfaced and wanted to buy it cash. So we were excited.
Yeah.
We're like, we got a cash buyer lined up. and we were high-fiving everybody. And then after we sold it, we were like, I think we left money on the table.
Yeah. We undersold it.
We undersold it. And then lot 66
So we sold that one for $20,000. And, you know, afterwards we're like, man, I think we kind of undersold that one. Knowing that we all in for every single one of these were average of $16,000. And so this next one came up as a real small one, real old, probably 70s, one bedroom. And we had a buyer that was going to buy it for $12,000. We're like, dude, we just need to get rid of this because this is like, this isn't that great of a mobile. And we didn't want to deal with the headache. But the agreement was, hey, you guys finish buttoning up because the kitchen wasn't fully in.
Right.
The bathroom wasn't fully in. There was like some, you know, trim and stuff that needed to be installed. And we're thinking, okay, we can probably get in there. And again, it was to the fault of us for not maybe firming up numbers enough on the remodel, but also really managing the process of the remodel. So we went in there and we're like, hey, it's going to be ready for $1,500. We'll just put some cabinets in there, let's cabinet base, put a stool in, and we're going to be ready to go.
Yep.
And in reality, it took a couple weeks longer than we wanted.
Yep.
And it took a couple $1,000 more than we wanted. We probably spent $4,000 to get it ready between the kitchen. And it would look nice. And it was a great little place for this new tenant to live, which is a good thing. But, I mean, if you subtract $12,000 and you subtract $4,000.
That's $8,000.
That's $8,000.
That's math.
What did we buy it for on average? $16,000. We're like, we just lost money on this home. And it was kind of one of those things where it's like, well, what do you do? There's no way we would have been able to sell that home for $16,000 ever, no matter how nice we would have made it.
Yep.
It just never would have made it there.
And that's when we realized we overpaid for him. And so that's been kind of an interesting learning curve for us. You know, the other one, again, same scenario. We had somebody interested in it from out of the area. They wanted to buy it. We thought it was an as-is thing. But then we got stuck into this thing of like, hey, we want to set these people up to win because they're going to be residents in our park.
Right.
So we can't just do nothing and then give them, you know, this dumpy thing that we're expecting them to fix up because it wasn't going to happen.
Right.
And then, you know, that is kind of a stain on our part because we want things to look clean. So then we, you know, got snookered into doing another extensive remodel on that one as well. That's been a learning curve. Now we're talking about maybe even trying to recoup some of those losses by seller financing them to people and getting some interest off of those payments over, you know, a 3 to 5 year period if people would be interested in that kind of thing. So we'll see how it shakes out, but
good learning experience though.
Yeah.
With the mobile homes.
Yeah. Don't think you can flip a mobile home. Yeah. Especially
depending on where it's at. I mean, where your park's at. I mean, we're in Ohio, but I mean, especially where your park's at and the demographic of the people around your park. You just gotta be real careful. You gotta try to do your research and you gotta make sure you kind of know what you're buying. So we've learned a lot through it. It's not like we're losing our tail on it, but we are losing a little bit of money on these first three. And so over the next 10, we're going to try to be a little bit smarter about how we remodel these. And some of them are nice already.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need remodeled, but about how we divest ourselves and sell them and market them.
And I guess it goes back to you make money in real estate when you buy or you lose money.
Or you don't. So,
and that's good. So, all right, let's go into what we call our little nugget. So today we're going to answer this question on our own. What's been one practical takeaway or piece of advice that our listeners can use to implement in their real estate investing businesses?
I'm going to let you take it away.
Back to me. So this is a twofold answer to this question. Number one is always have multiple exit strategies. You know, one, we've been hearing stories of people who have owned multifamily properties. This is happening in today's market. And if you do a quick Google search of multifamily owner loses property, you'll find all these headlines popping up of people that didn't have an exit strategy.
Yeah.
And they did not have, they only had one. And when that closed, they didn't have alternatives. Therefore, they're losing these properties.
Yep.
So always have multiple exit strategies. For us, in this case, it was, we can hold this long term and have a great cash flowing asset that they're not making more of, or because this is in demand, we think we could sell it in the next 2 to 5 years and do well on it. The second part of it from our mobile home experience has been understanding the power of larger commercial residential properties and how you can disproportionately drive value. So from a value perspective, we bought it and we added 20%, 25% of income in the first 4 months of the property.
Yeah.
That's massive. And all of that drives the overall value of the park.
Because essentially, to really simplify, because really what we're doing is not complicated. It's raising, increasing income, lowering expenses, and making the park a better place to live, a safer place to live. And really, just like you'd flip a house, we're flipping a mobile home park because we're trying to increase value, make it better, and then sell it to a buyer who wants to take kind of a packaged asset that's kind of ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the strategy behind that.
And that applies to a lot of different types of properties. Multifamily definitely is one of those ways. So understand that. You know, we had a guy, it was Seth Teagle.
In Columbus.
And I know we both were shocked when he said this, but he's like, if you want to make thousands, play with thousands. If you want to make millions, play with millions, right?
Yeah, he said that on our podcast. And we were like,
freaking mic drop. Just, can you kind of come on my podcast and lecture me?
No, I liked it.
It obviously, I remembered it.
Yeah.
And now I'm bringing it up again because it's true. You know, in real estate, it's that way. So there's a progression. You have to start somewhere. And so I'm not saying you jump into the deep end of the pool right away.
You start with the house hack. You start with the house hack like we did. And over the last few years of us being in real estate and exposing ourselves to bigger deals, more deals, you know, getting in the reps of our smaller, you know, single families and small multis.
You learn, you grow.
I mean, it's a progression. We didn't just start here at a mobile home park.
Right.
And I guess I just want to give a little bit of plug for what we're doing now and what we're transitioning part of our business over into.
Yeah.
And so, Garrett, you want to talk about that? I mean, so the title of this episode is, you know, we started a real estate company, or we're starting a real estate company. So, gasp.
So, yeah, if you're on YouTube, you can check out our new swag. We're swagalicious right now.
Yeah. I guess.
No, that
didn't do it for me.
Yeah, it didn't come off right. We got some new swag, and so you can see on our shirts here, Level 5 Capital. Level 5 Capital is the name of our real estate investing company. So in short, kind of like the mobile home park, this is a good example, we structure investments to create opportunities for investors who want the benefits of real estate, but not the hassle.
Yeah, and so we recently, and we'll dive into this within another podcast, but we closed on a 96 unit. That we were partners on. So that was a multifamily property. So that was really exciting. So we just closed on that about a month ago.
Right.
And we'll have another podcast dedicated maybe to that transaction and how that all went down. And again, we were able to participate in seller financing to buy that 96 unit.
Right. Which, man, and maybe that's another episode. We need to talk about like seller finance in today's market and why that is going to be more and more of a common thing. But yeah, Seth, you're exactly right. So that was another example of us through Level 5 Capital creating an opportunity for people who they want the benefits of real estate. They love real estate. They like it. They want to be involved in it. Maybe they have the money for it, but maybe they don't have the time. Maybe they don't have the experience or the competency to tackle big projects like this.
Yeah.
But they still want to be a part of it. And so that's where Level 5 Capital comes in. We're always looking for those kinds of opportunities. I would say primarily in the multifamily, in the mobile home space right now. I'm not saying it wouldn't grow into other stuff down the road, but that's really kind of our niche and what we feel comfortable with that we can find value and do a good job operating on the behalf of our other partners.
So if you want to know more about Level 5 Capital and what we're doing, go ahead and DM Garrett or myself on Facebook or LinkedIn would be the best places. And we can connect and catch up on what we're doing and maybe what's going to come up next for Level 5 Capital and what other kind of deals we're trying to tackle.
Guys, hopefully today was a good episode for you as we kind of break down this deal. It's still happening, so maybe we can do some follow-up stuff, posts on this, but we've learned a lot through it and hopefully you can too, especially as you try and tackle more and more complex deals and you understand the power of real estate.
As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.